And now I'll let you in on a little internal debate that we've been having on the show. Are podcasts entertainment? And more to the point, do we even cover podcasts on The Frame? And I guess the answer we've arrived at to all of those questions is a resounding sometimes. Which brings us to Dear Franklin Jones. It's a documentary memoir podcast that is produced and hosted by Jonathan Hirsch.
When I was a kid, I truly believed that Jones was our benevolent master, a divine giver king, a god. When I grew up and left the group, I learned that many consider it a cult, and Jones, a cult leader.
In the course of 7 episodes, Hirsch, who's a producer and composer living in L.A., revisits and reconsiders his childhood and how it was dominated until he was 17 years old by his parents' guru, a man named Franklin Jones. Jones was an American spiritual teacher who developed a following in California in the 1970s and 80s, but some of his followers would eventually accuse him of brainwashing and sexual assault. Hirsch is not among the accusers, but he does explore those charges in his podcast. When Jonathan Hirsch joined me in studio, I played a clip from the first episode of his podcast in which he looks at the autobiography of Franklin Jones with his mother.
Now, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because I think a lot of people... Can you pick up that book for a sec?
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine people looking at that cover and not finding it attractive at all.
Sure.
And what would you say to those people? What are they missing? What are they missing about looking at that photo and saying, geez, it just looks like a heavy-set man in his 50s and half-naked standing in front of a bunch of people worshiping him?
Sure. But what's missing is what it was like to be in his presence. Because being in his presence was like a power you have never experienced.
There's a lot of conversation in this podcast about seeking and
right.
about the need to have somebody in your life that's going to fulfill something that's somewhat hard to identify.
Right.
And then there are these kind of larger than life charismatic figures who can fill that in some right. ways. Was that something that you fully understood when you started working on this, that relationship between the seeker and the person who could somehow provide that which was being sought?
Not entirely. You know, I knew my parents' story. And I knew, you know, my mom was born in the Midwest, raised in the 1950s and 60s, went to college in Detroit in 1968, during a time in our country where there was a great deal of distrust of the government, of established religions and ways of doing things. The established order in a lot of ways was changing. And my mom felt that she was sort of in the center of that. She saw protests on the campus of her college. She had a boyfriend that died in Vietnam while she was in college. And she started to feel like she didn't know what kind of world she was living in. She, as far as what she said to me, was looking for something deeper. And my dad's own story reflects another kind of experimentation where people from that era arrived at this big question about what their life was about. So for him, as an Hungarian immigrant who became a refugee in the U.S. after the Hungarian Revolution, he started a life here and was living in Santa Monica in the 1960s, working at a restaurant, you know, dating here and there. And he started to experiment with psychedelic drugs. And he had an experience while dropping acid where the world and his relationship to it as a person shifted in this way he couldn't quite explain. And so for him, it raised the same question. What is my place in the world and what does it mean? And I think until I did the story, I didn't realize how those two experiences so appropriately encapsulated the experience of many boomers.
A lot of this podcast, in many ways, is about memory and about emotional memory, about what was I thinking and feeling at the time. And unlike today's generation, where everything is in emails and texts that may vanish, there are diaries, there are poems, there are contemporaneous records of what people like you were feeling at the time. So I want to play another
right.
clip. And this is where you go back to your mother's storage space and find some old diaries.
Okay. I felt the pain of the social and conventional world fall away.
my eyes closed. My impulse was to cry and grieve over all the horrible imprintations upon the heart the body makes. But I realized soon after, by your grace, that this too is the ego. I love you forever, beloved of my heart. Love, Jonathan Hirsch.
I mean, I see you reacting to that. You're the guy getting choked up and emotional. What does that piece of writing mean to you?
I mean, it's hard not to, even now, even after having heard that so many times. It still evokes a very intense response in me. Because what I see in that young man who wrote that was someone willing to give over everything to somebody else with the hope that in return would arrive someday a sense of realization and peace and calm that may never come.
And yet there's another moment where you come across a poem where you say, I'm trapped inside this crazy world, seems to be no way out.
Yeah.
That it's both the best and worst of wanting to belong and believe and not being able to escape that which you thought you wanted to belong to.
Yeah. And that is very interesting because there's a snarl of complicated feelings and emotions and thoughts around that very idea. When I was growing up, there were two different kinds of people that we were taught existed. There were people who were part of the community, and then there were people who were part of the world. And it was literally the shorthand that we used to describe all kinds of things that would come up in your life. There's the worldly thing, there's the community thing. The community, the community, the community. Just the idea that we were living within the boundaries of Franklin Jones's teachings and within his group, our lives were defined by a different set of rules. And so in some ways, it's hard to know that diary entry, whether in that moment I felt it was the world that was causing me so much confusion and suffering, the quote-unquote world, or the community.
When you are working on a podcast like this and reporting it, you meet a lot of obstacles in terms of getting people to talk.
Of course.
And then the irony, of course, is that once you finish the podcast, everybody wants to talk. So what has the response been that has been either the most interesting or most gratifying from people who maybe shared a life very similar to you and your parents?
I mean, it's been disarming, just the volume alone. But I will say the most edifying and the most intense kind of feedback I've received is from people who grew up in different religious or spiritual communities than I did, and who found by going through this process with me that it helped them in some way find a way to do it for themselves. And that, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've just sat there, tears in my eyes, reading through these notes, being like, my gosh, I'm so grateful that I've come out on the other side of this experience. And I cannot believe that there aren't more opportunities for people who have been through similar experiences to find a way to sort of collectively process. And I feel like the show opened that door for enough people that I came to understand that it was a thing, that it was something the show did for some people.
Podcasts have become, in some ways, the intellectual property equivalent of comic books.
Right.
That studios, TV producers are now looking at podcasts for like the next story that they want to tell. Is there a next story that can be told about Dear Franklin Jones?
I'm continuing to write about this experience. So in some ways, I'm not done processing what happened for me. But to answer your question more directly, I think one of the big conclusions I drew as a audio documentary producer was that in some ways I feel like Dear Franklin Jones was kind of like the first audio memoir, if you will. It's not quite a book on tape. It's not just a documentary, but it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's about processing things that have happened in your life. It's reflecting on your life. And when I came to that conclusion, I realized that there needed to be more of those. That for the wide variety of experiences that we have on this planet, podcasting in some ways is a perfect medium to construct these kinds of audio memoirs. So, I think there's space for that. I would like to be part of that.
Jonathan, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan of the show. It's great to be here.
Dear Franklin Jones is a production of Stitcher, and all 7 episodes are available now from Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts.